Do you read the fine print? Are you someone who looks into all the terms and conditions before you tick that accept button? Accept the little box? For instance, do you know that when you use Microsoft's guess my age thing, that you are actually giving them permission to use your face and name, or the face and name of the other person that you've put in, for whatever purpose they want, for their advertising, for their promotions, and not just them, but their whole umbrella of companies. Well, have a thought for these guys. In London last year, a couple of people sat down in a cafe and got out their laptops and hooked up to the free Wi-Fi provided by the cafe. And I ticked through, yes, I accept the terms and conditions, and unwittingly signed away their firstborn child to the cafe, to the company providing the Wi-Fi. Now, it was funny. It was in there as a joke, and as a kind of test to see how people would respond to it, how many people would notice. But if you're anything like me, then you probably don't always read all the terms and conditions. And to some extent, we need to trust people, don't we? We trust companies that put those terms and conditions out. We trust that they're working for our good, and we hate it when they take advantage of us. It gets under our skin. And we love the Today Tonight expose of the phone company that's caught some young 9-year-old boy in a trap, and now he's got a $6 million phone bill because he hasn't read the terms and conditions. It's danger. There's danger in that, isn't there? Danger of being taken advantage of. But I want to suggest that there's also danger for us as Christians in the way that we talk about Jesus, in the way that we present the gospel. It's a trap that we can fall into as well. Sometimes, because we're really concerned about avoiding religion, the idea that you can work your way to God, that if you do enough good stuff, that God will accept you and give you the tick of approval. Sometimes because of that, we try and emphasize how free salvation is. We focus on the fact that God has done what needs to be done. He has paid the price in sending Jesus. He offers us salvation by grace as a free gift. And it's all true. It's all really important. That's the truth of the gospel. And yet, there's more to the gospel than that, isn't there? That though God has bought our salvation freely, he has saved us by grace, that doesn't just do nothing to our lives. When we accept salvation, it affects us. It changes our life. People who are following Jesus are transformed. When we leave that out, it starts becoming a kind of cheap grace, pushing so much on the freeness of salvation that costs nothing. It's all to be taken at no cost. And it can have the effect that people hear it and they go, "That sounds great. I want to sign up to that. Done." And they want to tick the box, or they want to like write their name on the petition, and then that's it. No change, no difference in their life. It's dangerous that there's something they just add. They add Christianity on to what's already going on in their life. It's just another kind of thing they like on Facebook. Oh, I think this is true. And we get a kind of like modern Christian pluralism. That people can go on worshipping and building their lives around people and around their selfish desires and around stuff and call themselves Christian. And it's a lie. Friends, if you think that's just a modern thing, then you're mistaken. It's been going on for thousands of years. And Jesus addresses just that type of thinking tonight in Luke 14. See, Jesus has been spending time talking to the Jews and particularly the leaders and teaching them that he is God's promised king. He's been trying to show them that he is the one they need to they need to accept. He's the one they need to come to. They need to open the door or enter via the narrow door. They need to accept the invitation to the banquet. They need to recognize God's King and understand the signs. But he's met with a lot of resistance, for the most part. But now, in this passage, he turns from addressing them, and he turns from talking about why people need to recognize him. He turns to people who are really enthusiastic about him, the crowds that are following. They've all jumped on the Jesus bandwagon. And so he's not teaching them about why he's the king that they need to follow. He teaches them about what it means to follow him, what it means to be one of his disciples. And he gives them this warning that when they think about living as a Christian, and they think about following him, they ought to count the cost. They ought to be aware of what they're getting in for. See, Jesus uses two illustrations to ram this point home, doesn't he? Right in the middle of that section. The first one in verses 28 to 30. Have a look there. Jesus said, "For which of you, desiring to build a tower, does not first sit down and count the cost, whether he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish it, all who see him begin to mock him, saying, 'This man began to build and was not able to finish.'" See, you don't want to be that guy, do you? You don't want to start building and then kind of have a half-done job and everyone laughs at you. I knew a guy like this. I used to live near him. We used to call him three-quarters man because his yard was full of like half-done projects, cars half restored. There were like renovations on the house that like were covered with tarps and stuff because he got three-quarters of the way through. And he didn't run out of money. He just got bored. He liked the idea of starting something and would get into it and then would get another idea and start something else and just would never finish. And it was a bit of an ongoing joke. But Jesus' warning is, don't be like this as his followers. You need to know what's involved. Know at the outset. Don't get halfway along and then get caught out by surprise. Know at the beginning how much it's going to cost. Know what's entailed in being his disciple. And there's the following illustration, isn't there? Verse 31 and 32. So Jesus said, "Or what king, going out to encounter another king in war, will not sit down first and deliberate whether he is able with 10,000 to meet him who comes against him with 20,000? And if not, while the other is yet a great way off, he sends a delegation and asks for terms in peace." So you know at the outset what it's going to cost. Do the sums. Figure it out. Know if you're not going to be able to take him on with 10,000. If it's going to be better to surrender, to ask for peace and work things out. Don't get caught out. Don't wait till it's too late. You figure it out early while he's still a long way off. This is the challenge for the great crowds that have begun to follow him. Count the cost. And what does it cost? What does it cost to follow Jesus? Well, in a word, everything. It costs everything. And Jesus breaks it down for us into three categories. It means that we have to hate the people around us. It means that we have to die to ourselves. And it means we have to abandon all claim to possessions, to stuff. Now, first of all, let's look at hate. Verse 26. Jesus said, "If anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, and even his own life, he cannot be my disciple." That's a big call, isn't it? That's a big call. And maybe you think, Jesus, are you confused? Like, aren't you the guy who tells us to love one another, to love our enemies? What do you mean when you say hate? What's going on? Is it just that he's kind of like exaggerating? He's putting it in very strong language in order to kind of like to shake him up a bit? Well, I don't think that's quite covering it. I think it comes down to our misunderstanding of hate. In modern usage of hate, modern English, hate, usually we're talking about a kind of really emotional position against someone, like a real venom that we seek against someone. Now, but just as we do with love, we know as Christians that love is not all about the emotion, not all that feeling, but it's about a commitment, a choice for someone. The same is true of hate, except that it's a choice against someone, a choice against them. It's about choosing ultimate allegiance to Jesus, right? Choosing to prioritize him, and by doing so, it means that we don't put first all those other people, fathers and mothers and wives and children and brothers and sisters. It means they don't come number one. It's something that we're not just called to do as people, but it's something that we actually see God doing himself. The Bible talks about God's choosing in exactly these words. It says of the way that he chose Jacob over Esau, Isaac's sons. It says, Jacob I loved, but Esau I hated. Now, it's not that God had a real vendetta against Esau and had a personal, emotional case against him. It was that reflecting the choice. In choosing Jacob, he did not choose Esau. And as he loved Jacob and blessed him, he hated Esau by not choosing him in the same way. I was at a wedding yesterday, I was running it, and we get this idea there. There's a line in the wedding service that says, do you take this man or woman forsaking all others? Forsaking all others. It doesn't mean that we're to like have an emotional case against all other people or to really disregard them or treat them poorly. But it's talking about the way that we prioritize that one person in our life, isn't it? We love them in a way that we don't love other people. And that's what Jesus is talking about here. No one else should get that first place, that love, that allegiance that is only for him. It's a hard call, isn't it? It's a hard call to do that, to prioritize Jesus above all the other relationships we have. It'll mean that sometimes we have to sacrifice things in those relationships. Sometimes we'll have to sacrifice the needs and wants of people around us. Sometimes we won't be able to work for their best interest because it means we'll be prioritizing Jesus' best interest. Sometimes it means that we won't be able to be committed to them in a certain way because we need to be committed to Jesus. It won't mean that we won't be able to spend our time or our money or whatever it is on them because we need to spend that on Jesus. Our friends, this is really hard. And it's particularly hard because of the consequences that it can bring. It can really have severe consequences in relationships. If people don't feel like they're getting the attention, they're getting the love, being the priority that they think they should be. But God's not unaware of this. Paul even speaks about it in 1 Corinthians 7, and he talks about when there's a married couple and one of them becomes a Christian. And he says, well, if the other one, the non-Christian, wants to divorce you, well, so be it. Let them go. Because what matters most is your allegiance to Jesus over every other relationship. Now, this is really hard when we're relating to non-Christians because they don't have the capability of understanding this. But it's hard as well, even for Christians in our lives. It's hard not to meet their needs and the way that they think they should be met all the time. It's hard to feel like we're letting them down. It's especially hard, I think, for parents to treat their children in this way, to not seek to give them everything and do everything they can for them to give them the best life possible. No, but it's important. Now, we're not to make idols of people, especially our children. We're to follow Christ. Give him number one allegiance. Now, this will mean that we prioritize following Christ above other things. We prioritize coming to church over other opportunities that come up, other commitments we have. We prioritize growing in that relationship with Jesus. We make time to hear his word, to meet with other Christians in Bible study or youth group or whatever it is, even at the cost of the other things that we would love to be doing or the other people we'd love to be spending time with. Well, Jesus calls us to hate people. It's a big cost. But it's not just other people that we have to prioritize Jesus over, is it? It's also ourselves. And so in the next one, Jesus calls us to die to self. Verse 27. Whoever does not bear his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. Now, Jesus calls his disciples to take up their cross and follow him. To live as though they are crucified. To live with that reality every day. And putting to death the things that we would love to pursue ourselves. Our own ambitions, achievements, our own dreams, our own pride, our own name, our reputation, our honor, our own comforts and pleasures, our own fulfillment, our own identity that we're finding in anything else but him. And he calls us to put those things to death and to live following him. Living for his ambitions, the things that he's working for in the world. To live for his dreams, to live for his name, his reputation, to live for his honor, to find pleasure and comfort in him. And ultimately to find our identity only as his follower. We got to die to self if we're going to follow Christ. Lastly, the third one, Jesus calls us to abandon our claim to stuff. Have a look at verse 33. After the examples, Jesus gives this one. So therefore, any one of you who does not renounce all that he has cannot be my disciple. See, Jesus' followers have to give up the claim to the stuff in their lives. Have to give up grabbing onto it as my domain, as my territory, my little kingdom. Because when we realize that Jesus is the king, we realize that we want to be part of his kingdom, well, everything we have belongs to him, doesn't it? Our savings, our income, our possessions, but not just like kind of the material things, also intangible things we have. Our abilities, our expertise, our knowledge, our time, our strength, our endurance. It's all to be brought and put at the disposal of Jesus for his sake, for his kingdom. And there's nothing, there's no area of our lives that we can kind of like just put a little shield around and keep back and say, I'm just keeping this as mine. Just keeping this for myself. It's nothing. And when we follow Jesus, when we submit to him as Lord, he claims mine over all of us. Now, what does this look like? It's probably not going to look like you going home and putting everything you own on eBay and giving the money to charity. Probably not. It might for one of you, just throwing it out there, but probably not. But it probably does look like embracing radical generosity. A generosity just like Jesus shows. It's in line with his priorities. That's one that's costly to ourselves. It probably will look like honoring the pledges and commitments that we've made to support the work of gospel ministry, furthering the work of God's kingdom. It probably does look like assessing the way that we spend our money and the way that we use our gifts and abilities with Jesus in mind. Thinking, what would Jesus think of the way that I'm using these? Friends, it is a very high cost to be Jesus' disciple. It costs everything. Now, talk is cheap. It's easy to say, I follow Christ. It's easy to say, yeah, I want that salvation that you're offering for free. But the reality is, if we want that, if we want to embrace that, that we're going to be open to be changed. We're going to be open ourselves up to that cost. Now, be honest with yourself. How are you going at following Christ? Walking as one of his disciples? How are you going at hating the people around you? Because you're prioritizing loving Christ as number one. How are you going at dying to self in order to live for his kingdom? And how are you going at abandoning your claim to anything you can possess? It's hard. What do you find hardest? What's the thing that's most costly to you? What's the thing that maybe you're still clinging to? Still trying to keep back. Maybe you're thinking, Toby, you don't know how hard it is for me in my particular situation. You don't know how important this thing is. You don't know how much it would hurt these people. You don't know how long I've strived. You don't know how great the cost would be for me. And the answer is, of course, no. I don't know what it's like to be you in your situation. It's different for everyone. But ultimately, it's not my call to come follow Jesus that you need to heed. It's God's call. And he does know. He does know what it will cost for you to walk following Jesus, for you to be his disciple. He does know, and he knows it's worth it. Because he knows what it cost him to make you his disciple. See, it cost God his firstborn son. He wasn't tricked by the fine print. He was fully aware. He knew how much it would cost. He knew that Jesus would have to die so that you could be a disciple. And he said, yes, it's worth it. And he chose it. He chose to do it. It's worth it. My friends, Jesus' warning is clear and loud for us tonight, isn't it? When we recognize that he's God's promised king, that he is the savior that we want, we also need to recognize that he is the Lord, the one that we need to submit to, the one that we need to follow. And we need to be aware about what it means for our life. We need to count the cost. We need to figure out now and not get stuck halfway through and be surprised by it, and walk into it with open eyes, knowing how costly it is. You might be sitting here today listening and thinking, well, I'm not a Christian, but I've been hearing about this Jesus King. He's offering forgiveness. He offers salvation. But it seems like a high price. Maybe it's too high. Now, if you're thinking that, let me share with you the testimony of Christians across the world for the last 2,000 years. It is worth it. It is truly worth it. Dr. Livingstone, the renowned missionary to Africa during the 19th century, endured great hardships before many of the mod cons were invented, without the ease of communication instantly, separated, isolated from family and friends, endured a long ministry there through many hardships. And yet, reflecting on it, he made this statement. He said, "I never made a sacrifice." He's not saying it wasn't hard. He's saying when you weigh it up, everything that it cost, everything that was difficult, it was worth it. It was worth it. And friends, it's always worth it. It's worth it when we hate people by choosing Jesus first. It's worth it because that sets us free to love them pure from any idolatrous attitude we have. To love them truly. And it's that kind of love that's going to point them to Jesus and the relationship that they need most. It's worth it when we die to self and we live following Jesus. Because then we find the truth of it when Jesus said, "I have come that they may have life and have it to the full." And it's worth it when we abandon our claim to the stuff we possess. And we're free from the worries that come with ownership. The worries that drive us to seek more and more and more when our security is tied up in it. And we're freed and find great joy in the treasure that is in heaven. Friends, count the cost of following Jesus. It is a very high price. It will cost everything. But it is worth it. If anyone comes to me and does not hate, he cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not bear his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. Any of you who does not renounce all that he has cannot be my disciple. Salt is good. But if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It is no use either for the soil or for the manure pile. It is thrown away. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. Let's pray. Our Father God, thank you for the salvation that you provide freely in Jesus, salvation by grace. Thank you that you have done what it took to make things right when we could not. Father, please help us, help none of us to be misled about the Christian life. Help us to know and fully understand the cost, that it's costly to our relationships, to our selfishness, and to our commitment to stuff and holding on to the things we have. Father, please help us to truly understand that, but also to know the truth that it is worth it. Help us to count the cost and gladly pay it, following Jesus. Amen.